starting?
Well, I started a concerto over the summer, and as soon as I finished it, my piano teacher, he also has a sound recording booth, so we went straight there and we recorded.
Wow. How long did it take you to get it the way you wanted it to?
It's probably 7 or 8 takes.
Yeah. It's a lot different when you have to make it perfect and fit it all together. Which brings up an interesting question, Maestro, because she had the opportunity to use a recording studio. It has to be one take. You can't do the editing. We wouldn't allow the editing and the punch editing in a recording, right?
Well, when you listen to a recording, sometimes you can tell it was edited, sometimes you can't, depending on how sophisticated instruments in terms of recording you are using and who is the recording engineer. But I think even when you have the ability to sort of massage the product or not, a experienced ear...
USA Radio News with Melody Burkett.
New Jersey State Police are warning potential tourists to Cuba to look out for cop killers and terrorists.
Colonel Rick Fuentes has released a video just days before President Obama's historic trip to Cuba to try to restore diplomatic relations. In it, an ominous warning for potential visitors to Cuba.
I believe that all those considering travel to Cuba need to be aware that 4 dangerous fugitive terrorists are living free and protected on the island.
They include Joanne Chesimard, who was convicted in the 1973 killing of a New Jersey state trooper. The others are Charlie Hill, William Morales, and Victor Garena. Together, they're wanted for multiple murders and terrorist bombings. Sarah Lee Kessler, New Jersey.
One of the men who was wanted in connection with November's terror attacks in Paris is reportedly in custody. Reports follow a raid in Brussels where police were tracking down Salah Abdeslam. This is USA Radio News.
For over 75 years, GEICO's been about consistency, as in we've consistently helped people save money on their car insurance. And to prove it, we'll air one of our first radio commercials from over 75 years ago.
At GEICO, we're all about consistency, as in we consistently help people save money on their car insurance. To prove it, you can call GEICO. Call us today, call us tomorrow, call us 75 years from now.
That was way more consistent than I expected.
GEICO, saving people money for over 75 years.
Welcome to Staples.
Staples guy, is this the right price on paper?
Yes, it is.
That's low.
Well, Staples has everyday low prices on the office items you use most.
How do you know what my office uses most?
We have low prices on pens, coffee, pencils, tech products, ink, and paper.
You do know what we use most. You're like a psychic.
Well, that's just what I see in your cart.
Oh, right.
Go to Staples for everyday low prices, plus special deals for even more savings. Make everyday low prices happen. Make everything for your business happen. Staples. Make more happen.
A Sacramento man indicted again on terrorism-related charges. USA's Anthony Lucero has more.
A Sacramento man accused of attempting to provide support to terrorists is now under indictment in Illinois. Authorities say a 23-year-old Iraqi refugee could face up to 15 years in prison if convicted. In an earlier indictment in Sacramento this year, he pled not guilty to making false statements to U.S. immigration agents about traveling to Syria to fight for terrorist organizations. He came to the U.S. back in 2012. I'm Anthony Lucero.
Police are looking into who sent a suspicious letter and a powdery substance to Donald Trump's son. An envelope containing an unidentified white powder was delivered to Eric Trump at his Manhattan apartment. Preliminary tests indicate the white substance is not hazardous. According to a law enforcement official, the letter, postmarked March 5th from Boston, implied if Trump doesn't drop out of the presidential race, the next envelope will not be a fake. This is USA Radio News.
At GoDaddy, a domain name is the beginning of something awesome. Use it to create a website to promote your business. Open an online store to sell your products. Start a blog. Build your brand. You can even connect your domain to your LinkedIn or Facebook page. And GoDaddy customer support is always ready to help. What will you do with your domain name? Get a free domain with website from GoDaddy.com, starting at $1 a month. Annual purchase of website builder required. Price valid first year only. See website for details.
Spotify paying up in a royalty dispute with music publishers. The streaming company settling its license dispute with the National Music Publishers Association will pay over $20 million in owed royalties. In exchange, the publishers agreeing to not file copyright infringement claims. Stress can be harmful not only mentally but physically as well. We get details from USA Radio's Tammy Rose.
It doesn't matter who you are. Stress is a simple fact of life. It's nearly impossible to avoid. So
it's really a matter of how you're dealing with stress that is the key point.
Dr. Deepak Bhatt is a cardiologist at Boston's Brigham and Women's Hospital. He says stress management is crucial to healthy living because stress can be harmful. It raises blood pressure and heart rate. So the doctor suggests exercise, positive thinking, meditate or pray, unplug from electronics, and get enough sleep. I'm Tammy Rose.
Police in New York investigate after mail that was sent to one of Donald Trump's sons was found to contain white powder. Sources say preliminary tests finding the powder to be non-hazardous. Eric Trump receiving the envelope at his residence in Manhattan Thursday night. Tony Bennett is doing fine. University of Virginia basketball coach Tony Bennett, collapsing from dehydration during the NCAA tournament game, was taken to the locker room. Now, that led to some confusion on social media, with some thinking that the legendary singer Tony Bennett had collapsed. The singer assuring everyone online he's doing fine, and so is the coach. This is USA Radio News, powered by WesternJournalism.com.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Well, good afternoon. I'm Pat Smits. The program, It's the Law. But I'm sure that everyone who's listening is most interested in the weather. So what's the latest? Well, tomorrow should be a beautiful day, mostly sunny, about 45 degrees. And so, you know, get out there because we are getting some snow. As far as Saturday night, there is a chance of snow, mainly after 2 a.m., about a 40% chance that it'll start. However, mostly cloudy, low around 29 degrees. The snow on Sunday is likely. It's about a 70% chance, and even more so on Sunday night. But the chance of about a 70% chance on snow on Sunday, about 1 to 3 inches is what they're suggesting might be the amount for this area. And then on Sunday night, snow is likely, but before 2 a.m. Then a chance of snow showers after 2 a.m. Cloudy, low about 26%. And again, they have about 60% chance of snow. And then there is a chance on Monday, about a 30% chance of rain and snow. So, you know, doesn't look like it's going to be the beautiful spring weather that we've been having. And I don't know about you, but my daffodils are all up. And, you know, hopefully it'll be not too cold and we'll be here and gone quickly. I certainly know that the reservoir needs water. The reservoir, Rhone Valley, I live near Rhone Valley, and the reservoir is really low. So I suppose we can certainly use this snow, rain, but it looks like it could be a mess on Sunday. So I will be right back and start the program as soon as you hear from a couple of the people who sponsor us.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
Okay, we're back. The program, It's the Law. I'm Pat Smits. Those of you who know me know that I limit my practice to family law. However, I'm going to tell you in probably in detail today about a case that we all need to worry about, or at least anyone who drinks needs to worry about, and it goes back to the old adage, don't drink and drive. And really, in New Jersey, you really have to heed that warning. If you want to go out and have fun, fine, but have a designated driver, give someone else your keys before you have too much to drink, and don't end up the way Diane Monaco ended up. So let me talk about that case. It was approved for publication yesterday. It is a New Jersey appellate case, but I'd like to go through kind of the history of this case so people understand what to do, what not to do, and certainly what not to do if you were pulled over, at least to cooperate and take a breathalyzer. So this was a case where Ms. Monaco appealed from her June 2014 conviction. So now that's the other thing people have to understand, that appeals take a long time. So she appealed after her conviction in June of 2014, and it was just approved for publication, meaning that the court, it was submitted on November 5th of 2015, and now decided in March of 2016. So the judges on the case were Judges Alvarez, Oster, and Manahan. And that means it was a three-judge panel. They heard it, and they must have seen something in this case that they decided they wanted to write an opinion for publication. And what that means is that all the trial judges must follow published opinions. The attorneys can cite them, and this is going to be this case was a Morris County case. So this was the opinion was delivered by Judge Oster. So in this case, and I'll call her Diane. Diane was convicted of driving while under the influence of intoxicating liquor, a DUI. The statute that people need to look at is NJSA 39:4-50. However, she also refused to submit to a chemical breath test, and that is a separate conviction, and the statute is NJSA 39:4-50.2. Now, what the appellate division did in this case, they affirmed what happened below. But why don't we talk about what happened below? Because the first situation, of course, is a municipal court trial. And at that trial, East Hanover police officers testified for the state. And the defendant, Diane, testified in her own defense. She also called an expert in the field of sobriety tests by the name of Gil Snowden. And she called John Scolamiero, a doctor who is her own personal physician, and also called a friend, Claudette Mayer. Now, the court, this is the appeal, of course, this is the written decision from the appellate court. But apparently what happened is shortly after midnight on April 14th, 2012, Diane drove through a stop sign at a T-shaped intersection in a residential neighborhood of East Hanover Township. So, failing to turn right or left, which she would have to do at a T-intersection, she just continued forward, jumped the curb, and came to a stop on the lawn of a residence. Her airbag deployed. Now, when the first police officer arrived at the scene, Diane's vehicle was still in drive, but the engine was off. And what he testified is that he detected the odor of alcoholic beverage. And he also testified that her speech was slurred, and other aspects of her appearance indicated to him that she was intoxicated. And what she did, of course, is what most people do under the circumstances, is she denied consuming any alcoholic beverages. So she didn't even come up with the, oh, I had one. So the officer at that point administered field sobriety tests. And that's what happens. If you're pulled over and there is any suspicion that, in fact, you have been drinking, an officer will apply and administer field sobriety tests. And what this case the officer did is he did an alphabet test, and she did poorly. She skipped several letters. So we know that she wasn't 3 or 4 years old, and yet when he tried to have her give him the alphabet, she skipped several letters. Now, she stated that she had an injury to her left knee, but that was one of her complaints. However, the officer observed that she had no difficulty walking. He also asked her to perform the one-leg stand and a heel-to-toe tests, and she did poorly on both. These are things that officers in the field will ask someone who's pulled over and suspected of DUI to perform. And according to him, she was staggering and swaying. Her eyes were watery and bloodshot, and her face was flushed. So he arrested her, and she was transported to the police station. Now, initially, she was held in a processing room for about a half an hour. At least this is what the appellate division indicated, as depicted by a video recording that was put into evidence. And during that time, she was searched by a police matron and given a Miranda warning. And when we say a Miranda warning, that is a warning that is given to everyone who is charged with a crime. And if you're very, it's a very interesting case. It was decided by the Supreme Court in 1966, and it's Miranda versus Arizona. And if anyone is interested in finding out where they can find the case, obviously you can find it on the internet, and it's also published, of course. And so that she was given a Miranda warning, and she was read the standard statement regarding chemical breath tests and the DWI questionnaire. The other officer also completed a property report, and apparently she appeared calm and cooperative. At that point, she admitted she had consumed wine that evening. The officer permitted her to use her inhaler for her asthma. And over 20 minutes elapsed thereafter while the two officers, the second one who had been dispatched to the scene, or the matron were present in the room. So someone was always present in the room. Both officers testified that she did not, meaning the defendant, Diane, did not regurgitate or put anything in her mouth. And these are important things to observe when someone is going to be given the chemical breathalyzer test. However, she was then escorted to another room where the first officer who had arrested her administered the breath test. And what he said he did is he instructed her that she needed to breathe in deeply and blow in one long continuous breath until he directed her to stop. And when she said that she had used her inhaler, the officer responded that it would not interfere with her test because she had done so over 20 minutes earlier. Now, after the first attempt to administer the breath test, the officer asserted that Diane was not making a genuine effort to blow into the mouthpiece. And at that point, she responded that she had asthma. And then after two more attempts, the officer terminated the breath test. Now, apparently he must have said something not very nice to her, because the appellate division did say that although he was authorized to terminate the test at that time, the appellate division did not condone the officer's harsh language. And, you know, after he concluded that Diane did not try to complete the test, he apparently demeaned her, stating that she disgusted him. And, of course, what the appellate division reminded him is that he did not have the expertise to judge the extent of her claimed disability, certainly not at that point. So then there was an issue of her air volumes, and she was taken to a cell where she, accordingly to the testimony, acted belligerently, yelled, and cursed. Now, his trial testimony presented the facts that I've just talked to you about, and the other officer testified that he observed the defendant during the 20-minute observation period. Now, what did Diane testify? Well, she testified that she had one glass of wine at dinner with her daughter and a second glass while visiting her friend at her home. She said she drove through the stop sign while she was distracted by a phone call from her friend. She said her knee injury, which she documented, prevented her from performing well on the field sobriety tests. She also presented evidence of another medical condition to explain an aspect of her appearance when arrested. Now, Diane challenged the officer's testimony. She asserted that he could not have detected an odor of alcoholic beverage, as she had consumed coffee at the end of the evening. She denied that he asked her if she needed medical attention. She also maintained that he did not ask her to recite the alphabet, as he did not adequately instruct her, and he did not adequately instruct her how to perform the physical field sobriety tests. She also asserted that she blew as hard as she could when performing the breath test. Now, she also claimed that there was an interruption in the 20-minute observation period because she was permitted to leave the processing room to use the restroom in a cell, and she did that before returning to the processing room. She also asserted the police had tampered with the video evidence. So the witness, her treating physician, had been her treating physician for approximately 25 years. He was permitted to testify as an expert in internal medicine. And that's important because she now had an expert witness. And so that he was considered or qualified as an expert in internal medicine with treatment of pulmonary issues as part of his practice. So he testified that she suffered from asthma and that he had prescribed multiple medications for her asthma. So there was an objection to the question of whether or not, in his opinion, she was able to exhale 1.5 liters of air during a 4.5-second period. That was objected to. And the court held that defense counsel had not laid a significant, or sufficient, I guess I should say, not laid a sufficient foundation. And her attorney, the defense counsel, never returned to the question although the doctor's testimony resumed on the next trial date. And at that point, he presented pulmonary function tests he administered before and after the defendant's arrest. So the doctor also reviewed the test results from November 11, 2011, and he stated that post-treatment, defendant's forced expiratory volume was only 56% of what was predicted for a woman of her age, weight, and body mass index. And her flow rate was 45% of what was predicted. And so the report he made indicated that she had moderate obstruction. Now, the court found the doctor's explanation of the test results often confusing and even contradictory, particularly when he was asked to describe the test results that would allow for comparisons with the minimum breathing volumes required for the chemical breath test. So he did assert, however, that the defendant had ability prior to being treated for approximately 1.3 to 1.4 liters over about 4 or 5 seconds. Now, she improved to 3 liters post-treatment. However, according to the doctor, he noted that the tests were performed while the defendant was standing, and therefore he said that her results could be roughly 20% lower if seated and while taking a chemical breath test. He also asserted that the factors such as excitability and nervousness, anxiety, trauma. So, the next thing he did is he testified about a person, Mr. Snowden. He was her expert, alcohol expert. Yeah, but the other was the doctor. So the alcohol expert testified about how a person's physical impairments could affect balance and performance on field sobriety tests. Her friend testified that Diane had a glass of wine early in the evening and a cup of coffee later. She said that she called defendant shortly after she left but did not reach her, and then soon thereafter, the defendant called her to report the accident. So what happened after all of this testimony at the municipal court level? Then what happened is the judge credited the police witnesses over the defendant and found her guilty of DUI and refusal to take the breathalyzer. So as in this case, the defendant had a prior DUI in 2009. So what does that mean? Well, it means that the court imposed a 2-year loss of license, 48 hours at the Intoxicated Drivers Resource Center, IDRC, no jail time, but he did require her to have an ignition interlocked and mandatory minimum fines and fees. And on the reversal, a consecutive 2-year loss of license and 48 hours at the INRC was ordered. So let me be back and just break for the news, and I'll come back to tell you the rest of the arguments in this case, because these are the kinds of cases that everybody needs to look at or at least be aware of, and so don't do some of the foolish things that people tend to do, and then they don't, some of the times it's for years that they're suffering because of these things. So in any event, let me play some news and we'll be back.
USA Radio News with Melody Burkett.
Former Connecticut Governor John Rowland is appealing his 2014 corruption conviction.
Rowland was in federal appeals court in New York, arguing that prosecutors improperly hid evidence pointing to his innocence and that the trial judge played favorites with the government during the trial. He was convicted of trying to hide his role as a paid political consultant by volunteering for Lisa Wilson Foley's congressional campaign while being paid by her husband's firm. He was forced to resign in 2004 and served 10 months in prison on unrelated corruption charges. Rowland, who was sentenced to 30 months in prison, is free on bail pending the appeal. Terry Sheridan, New York.
Defense Secretary Ash Carter says China needs to step it up to help keep North Korea in check. Carter noted that China has the most influence over North Korea because of proximity and shared economic interests. This is USA Radio News.
Welcome to Staples.
Staples guy, is this the right price on paper?
Yes, it is.
That's low.
Well, Staples has everyday low prices on the office items you use most.
How do you know what my office uses most?
We have low prices on pens, coffee, pencils, tech products, ink, and paper.
You do know what we use most. You're like a psychic.
Well, that's just what I see in your cart.
Oh, right.
Go to Staples for everyday low prices, plus special deals for even more savings. Make everyday low prices happen. Make everything for your business happen. Staples. Make more happen.
QL1, does Rocket Mortgage require me to fill out a bunch of paperwork?
Negative control. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans is the first on-demand mortgage machine that quickly imports your financial data. You can go through the entire mortgage approval process in minutes.
That is fast, like rocket fast.
It also works on any internet-ready device, so you can get a Rocket Mortgage at any time or place you choose. Over.
3, 2, 1.
Rocket Mortgage at QuickenLoans.com. Push button, get mortgage.
Rocket.
Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org number 3030.
White House spokesman Josh Earnest says Senate Republicans should consider their constitutional obligations when it comes to the latest Supreme Court nominee. Senators are off on a two-week spring break.
Members of the Senate should take the next couple of weeks to consider their constitutional responsibilities and to consider whether or not they're comfortable with taking orders from Republican leaders in Washington as opposed to taking orders from the Constitution and the American people.
Senate Republican leaders have pledged to ignore President Obama's nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court. Obama nominated Merrick Garland to replace the late Justice Antonin Scalia. Garland is a veteran federal appeals court judge in Washington. Airmen at a nuclear missile base are suspended from duty and under investigation for drug use. The Defense Department says 14 airmen at F.E. Warren Air Force Base in Wyoming are suspected of using substances, including cocaine. The investigation is focused on what the junior airmen were up to in their off-duty hours. This is USA Radio News.
QL1, this is Control. Does Rocket Mortgage require me to come in and speak with someone?
Negative, Control. With Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, you can go through the entire mortgage process on your own and completely online.
Copy that, QL1, but if I wanted to speak to someone, do you think they're out there?
They're out there, all right. Their award-winning client service is beyond anything I've ever experienced.
3, 2, 1.
Rocket Mortgage at QuickenLoans.com. Push button, get mortgage.
Rocket.
Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org number 3030.
Many of us have experienced that unfortunate feeling in the gut prompting a quick search for the nearest bathroom. According to the CDC, 1 in 6 Americans get food poisoning every year. USA's Tammy Rose reports.
The number one rule in avoiding food poisoning is never leave perishable food at room temperature. As we head into spring, you might be planning a picnic, but remember the danger zone. Bacteria thrives in 40 to 140 degrees Fahrenheit, so bring a cooler. Poultry is the primary culprit when it comes to foodborne illness. Wash your hands when handling raw chicken or turkey. Avoid contaminating surfaces and thoroughly cook your meat. It's also important to rinse all fruits and vegetables, even if you're not planning to eat the outer skin. Finally, when digging into some leftovers, remember to reheat them properly. I'm Tammy Rose.
The Northeast could see up to a foot of snow starting this weekend. The National Weather Service says conditions are ripe for a winter storm system that could leave people digging out from Philadelphia to Boston. It's going to be much colder on the first day of spring, Sunday, when the snow could begin to fall. More tuna is on the recall list. The FDA says there are concerns that the products may be undercooked due to an equipment malfunction. Chicken of the Sea is voluntarily recalling about 100,000 cans of tuna. The brands involve canned chunk light tuna in water and in oil. That followed action by Bumblebee to voluntarily recall more than 30,000 cans of chunk light tuna in water and in oil. More information can be found at fda.gov. I'm Melody Burkett.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunting Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunting Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
Well, we're back. It's the law. I've been talking about the recent published case. Recent. It was published today, approved for publication. State of New Jersey versus Diane Monaco. And none of us want to be the defendant when the state of New Jersey is the plaintiff. We probably don't want to be the defendant in any case, but this is certainly the kind of case that can really total chaos if you're going to lose your license, as she did for 2 years. So what happened next? Well, after all of this was done, of course, and after she did not like what the municipal court did, she filed a motion with about the same issues in Superior Court. Now, as a result of that, there was a trial, and we call that a trial de novo, which means a brand new trial. And at this trial, Diane argued that the police lacked probable cause to arrest her because they did not properly administer the field sobriety tests. And she also argued that the police were not credible and that they failed to observe the defendant for the requisite 20-minute period. So if there are any other things, there probably were some other findings, but these findings are what was important. And, of course, the police, she said they were not credible. She said they did not observe her. All the tests that you've already heard, they administered at that point. She also said the police read her an outdated statement estimate. So at this point, they also, according to her, tampered with evidence, and she said, and the doctor said that what the doctor stated in his testimony supported her position and established that she was not physically able to give the kind of breathalyzer test that they're requiring. So the trial judge ignored every one of the arguments. So what happens? Are we alive today? I would say absolutely yes, because what the court found is that there was probable cause to arrest based on the totality of the circumstances. So I think that's very necessary to find out. So the court found that there was probable cause to arrest based on the totality of the circumstances, meaning everything that the police saw. And, because they were there to arrest, one issue could be, did they just go and arrest someone? But apparently not. Now, of course, there is... when did you, the court said they found probable cause. This is the trial court. And the trial court found probable cause even absent the field sobriety tests. And that is something that really needs to be scrutinized in every case. So, we're going to be back in a minute after a couple of spots from sponsors, and I'll finish talking about this case.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first, We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Pat and Heidi and Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325. You've got
a friend. Well, we're back. I'm your host, program It's the Law. My name is Pat Smits, and today I'm reviewing in depth the recent published case published today from the Appellate Division, approved for publication, and it was an appeal from a woman who was convicted of driving while under the influence, DUI, or what we used to call DWI, and refusing to submit to a chemical breath test. So at this point, she had a trial in front of the trial court, after the trial in front of the municipal court. And so the trial judge rejected each of her arguments, which was the first was that the police lacked probable cause to arrest her. And of course, police do have to have probable cause. And she said that they lacked probable cause because they did not properly administer the field sobriety tests. That was her first argument. She also argued that the police were not credible. She argued that the police failed to observe her for the requisite 20-minute period that they have to observe in order to give the breath the test. She also, one of the other, you know, they were going to throw in everything. So the other thing they said is the police read her an outdated standard statement. She also complained that the state tampered with evidence, and she said that her witness, Dr. Scolamiero, established that she was physically incapable of breathing at a sufficient volume for the ALCO test. Now, what they had done in this case is they had given her this controversial ALCO, A-L-C-O-T-E-S-T, ALCO test. And, however, the law division judge rejected each of these arguments. And the trial judge, the law division judge, and that's where these cases are tried, if they're tried a new trial, if there is an appeal from the municipal court. So they're initially tried in the municipal court, and there can be an appeal and basically a start over in the law division, which is in the superior court. And I also use that term interchangeably with trial court. So in this case, the trial court found that there was probable cause to arrest based on the totality of the circumstances confronting the arresting officers. Now, the court stated certain specific cases that have found that, and that was the basis for that. And as a result, the court found that probable cause existed even absent the field sobriety tests. So ordinarily, you can't just go out and arrest somebody and tell them they have to take a breathalyzer. But in this case, there was probable cause based on the fact that even though she was not able to complete the field sobriety test, the officer had probable cause based on the single car accident, the odor of alcohol, her physical appearance, and slurred speech. So if you have any impediment to speaking, if you're ever pulled over by an officer, please make sure that you're able to provide that information. And if it is has something to do with some medical condition, you should carry information with you just to protect yourself in the event that you are pulled over. But in this case, court said is that the field sobriety tests in this case only bolstered the finding of probable cause. And coupled with her admission that she had consumed wine, the trial judge found that the state established beyond a reasonable doubt that she was guilty of a DUI. So that's a high standard. And the court also rejected the defendant's challenge to the officer's credibility. And what you hear constantly in those cases is the court cites State versus Johnson, and based on that case, the trial court gave due but not controlling weight to the municipal court judge's determination that the officers were more credible than the defendant. So that was important. Now, the trial court also found that the state proved by clear and convincing evidence that the state complied with the 20-minute observation period. Now, this is required by another case, State versus Chung. And in this case, the court was satisfied that the officers, as well as the matron, maintained sufficient proximity to the defendant to detect whether she did anything to compromise the chemical breath test. And things that would compromise it would be either regurgitating or putting something in your mouth, though that would compromise that test. And however, the court stated that eye-to-eye contact all of the time is not required, and the court in that case cited their two cases that lead to that conclusion, and the judge cited to both of those. Now, the court relied on a case called State versus O'Driscoll and found that the failure to mention the prospect of an ignition interlock. I don't know, when I looked at that word, it didn't seem like it is what I knew it was. Anyway, that failure in the standard statement was inconsequential. In other words, remember I said that they had given her an outdated form. Well, it didn't make any difference according to the court. And because the fact that they didn't give her that advice had nothing to do whether or not that would affect her noncompliance with the breath test. And so that was what they used as far as, you know, they weren't going to say, hey, just because the form was old, you know, prosecutor, police officers, you lose. They said, but the court also rejected the defendant's claim that she left the processing room to use the restroom and that the police tampered with the video evidence. What the court did is the court closely examined the video evidence and concluded that in this case, the defendant's version of facts just lacked credibility. In other words, there's nothing. They could find nothing that would support her claims. And finally, the court found that the state proved refusal, meaning her refusal to take the breathalyzer test, beyond a reasonable doubt. So the court noted that the four elements of the violation, and they on the record noted that, and also cited State versus Marquez, a 2010 case that was decided by the New Jersey Supreme Court. So basically, and that what is required is the arresting officer has to have probable cause to believe that the defendant had been driving or was in actual physical control of a motor vehicle while under the influence of alcohol or drugs. And two, the defendant was arrested for driving while intoxicated. Three, the officer requested the defendant to submit to the chemical breath test and informed her of the consequence of refusing to do so. So, and it was a defendant thereafter who refused to submit to the test. So the trial court, based on all of the court's findings, state was satisfied that the first and second elements were met and that the video evidence and the officer's name sounds like Philippines, but his testimony established the third and the fourth elements. So we've gone through all of the elements. Many of us actually went through them with our children many, many years ago, and now we have new folks on the horizon. So anyway, the judge also had to deal with Dr. Scolomiero's testimony, and he found that the testimony, this was the doctor, that the testimony that he gave did not establish lack of capability. So the, I'm trying to remember, he had kind of had mishmashed testimony. And in fact, the court noted that when Dr. Scolomiero testified during, prior to that, and her November 2011 test, which was the last one before the accident, that at that point she had a pretreatment ability to blow 1.3 to 1.4 liters over about 4.5 minutes. I'm sorry, not 4 or 5 minutes, 4 or 5 seconds, which improved to, I can certainly look, but which improved 3 liters after treatment. She also had a minimum flow rate per rate. So, what happens now? So, she was found guilty of DUI and refusal and imposed the same sentences that the municipal court imposed. So, let's remember, this was a totally new trial. It was, the trial began in, what did I say? I don't remember when the trial began. But he did find, and I believe we say something like it was on trial. Yeah, it was June of 2014, and it never went up to the appellate division until 2015, and now has been published. And the court in this case went through everything about the individual attorneys. I mean, I shouldn't say individual attorneys, it was individual officers. So, in any event, the court also stated, not as a finding, well, perhaps as a finding, that Doris, the defendant, never tells the officers that she is incapable of producing the physical volume that you have to produce in order to do the investigation. So she did tell the one officer that she had asthma, but only after she failed to prove sufficient air volume. So, but that's pretty much wrapping that case up, because actually the appellate division talks about their standard of review and basically give a lot of credibility to the written opinion of the law division judge, and they comment only on two aspects of the defendant's challenge to her reversal conviction. And that was the officer's failure to inform her that an ignition interlock would be required if convicted of refusal, and also the allocation of the burden of proof. So those were the two that one would hope that he would get more and more trees. So on appeal, the defendant renewed her argument that she was not adequately informed of the consequences of a refusal to take the breathalyzer. And she said that was to blame the officer because he did not mention the ignition switch interlocked, which is something that obviously should have been. Now, they recognize that the standard and the standard statement in use at the time when the defendant was arrested, did not refer to the imposition of the litigation interlock requirement upon conviction. So this is another issue, another story for another day. But in any event, in this case, the was a well-written opinion, brings in a lot of cases, should also be written, or I should say be read by anyone who is taking seriously a task of getting someone in over the border. So I'll talk a little bit more about this, but the other thing that it was important under the criminal code
. Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org. The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Well, we'll go to the news in just a minute, but I wanted to wrap this up again, that the Appellate Division found no error in the court's findings, and especially that the defendant failed to demonstrate that she was incapable of performing the chemical breath test. The Appellate Division found that her doctor's testimony was often confusing and inconsistent. He did persuade everyone that she suffered from asthma and that her breathing capacity was roughly half that predicted for a woman of her age and size. He did present measurements of pretreatment breathing volumes and flow rates that fell below the level required for the... there's a level, and the measurements of pretreatment breathing volumes and flow rates, his testimony was confusing. And however, there was also a quotation to the criminal code, because that came up, and there has to be certain burdens of proof under the criminal code, much higher standard than simply civil. But under the criminal code, a person is not guilty of an offense under unless his liability is based upon conduct which includes a voluntary act or the omission to perform an act of which he is physically capable. And that's NJSA 2C:2-1. And however, the provisions of the code governing principles of liability are not applicable to the motor vehicle acts, the motor vehicle violation of